There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Hello and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, our daily podcast that brings together the best bits of today's show from Monday, October the 7th.
Shut up and drive.
We don't want you to shut up and drive. We want you to speak up and have a bit of a rant about what you'd like to change on the roads. There's a big event happening in Abu Dhabi this week, the World Road Congress. Also a big focus on transportation at Gitex this week as well. And we're asking you, if there was one thing on the roads that you could change, your wish list, what would it be? Mohammed's been in touch and this is what he wants.
I think it would be very useful, just like what you see on the British motorways. It's a public place for resting with facilities. I know someone will say that we've got gas stations, but it's not the same as somewhere where you can just go, stop there, come down, have a leg stretch, drink, and then move on. It helps to reduce the tension and stress of fast roads.
Yeah, Shoaib's been in touch as well. Everyone's got some great ideas.
I'm a daily commuter from Sharjah to Dubai, and I am spending like more than 1.5 hours on traffic every day for one side. Considering this one, whenever we are traveling from Sharjah to Dubai bound, and when we see the opposite direction, the road is empty. So why we are not thinking about to utilize the technology to use the empty space on the other hand side?
Do you know what? Shoaib gets my vote this morning for the best traffic suggestion. I sat here thinking I had all sorts of good ideas about things that could happen about parking and speed limits. If you were to connect Sharjah and Dubai and Abu Dhabi with fast, speedy, efficient public transport, whether that is a Hyperloop or an old-fashioned train or some kind of super stretch metro, whatever it is, that would be an absolute life changer for people who commute in both directions.
Other messages coming in. Do something about rash drivers, please. Thanks very much indeed. Marie wrote in earlier, she wants undercover cars on the roads fitted with cameras. I think maybe we already have those.
On the side of the road sometimes, yeah.
And if they're undercover, I guess by definition, we don't know if they're there or not. I want to have drones flying overhead, catching rash drivers, people who cut in at junctions when it's busy, people who reverse down slip roads if they're taking a wrong turn. So yeah, doing something about rash drivers, I would echo that.
And there's a lot of call for a crackdown on what's being called road bullies, the people who like to drive right behind you into your bumper because they don't think you're going fast enough or they want to teach you a lesson for something else you've done.
Hefty fines for drivers with children who are either not wearing seatbelts or sitting in the front seat. Yeah, absolutely, I'll vote for that one. And indicators. Sandra writes in, use of indicators regularly, please. And that's from Sandra. Thank you for all of those.
Fines.
We've been speaking to Claude Van Roten, who's the president of the World Road Association, one of the lead speakers at the events happening in Abu Dhabi this week. We asked him essentially the same question. What are the big issues globally that we're facing with roads transportation? This is what he told us.
I think there are two biggest issues, and they have almost always been. The first is accessibility, because in our world there are still regions not enough accessible, and the road is number one to start. And the congestion and the urbanization is another issue, because we have more and more people on our planet, and we have to organize the transport. Road has always been the base of everything, but as you know, a tram, a bicycle, a pedestrian, a bus, all of them are on roads or streets, of course, and that is a challenge. And last challenge, a little bit different, but which will be the future, the technologies who are coming very quickly are much quicker than, of course, the evolution of an infrastructure. When you build a bridge, you expect that he is going to be there for 50 years or 100 years, but your mobile phone, within 5 years, you have another model. And this is interesting to see that difference of evolution. So all sectors must, even more than each sector, anticipate.
And there you go. That's the president of the World Road Association meeting down the road here in Abu Dhabi for the World Road Congress.
The other story we're talking about this morning is the workplace wardrobe and the demise of the suits.
I am a killer, bitch.
Suited and booted, are you, though? That's the question. All kicked off by Marks and Spencer speaking to analysts in the City of London and saying we're going to reduce the amount of suits we carry and the amount of floor space we give to them because sales of suits and ties are falling.
I have come suited and booted. I'm wearing a new suit that I had made actually over the summer. I hadn't bought a suit for a while, but I thought I might smarten up a little bit. So I bought a new suit and some shirts. I'm wearing it today.
And the guys at Global Data, the analysts at Global Data are saying, look, it is a generational trend. A lot of employers trying to get young, bright, tech-savvy things in. Banks and all the rest of them fighting for the same tech talent as people like Apple. And so you see Goldman Sachs, you say JP Morgan, reducing their dress codes to allow effectively what I would call leisure wear instead of suits in the office. We've been speaking to one suit expert this morning. We got a tailor in to say, look, are people still coming to you for suits or is the suit dead? Gary Sweeney is the brand manager at Ascots and Chapels, and we said him, is the suit over?
I think for here, we're seeing a change definitely in how the way people are wearing suits. I noticed a comment that you said earlier on, is the suit dead? I wouldn't necessarily say that it's dead, but I think the way people are wearing suits and how they choose to style and dress themselves is definitely changing.
Some analysts say £100 million has been wiped off suit sales in the UK in the last couple of years.
The Instagram poll we've got is asking, is basically giving you a binary choice. Do you prefer smart or casual? And Mohammed's in casual, Chino's in a t-shirt, and I'm very, very smart. 71% say casual, 29% say smart. So there's still a significant minority who like the smart look. But actually the point that Gary made was that is a false dichotomy. Because he came in today wearing a suit, but looking very different to me, didn't he, Brandy?
He did. You're wearing your suit with cufflinks, proper white starched shirt, a tie, or the accoutrement.
Leather polished shoes.
Posh shoes, exactly. Gary came in and he had a very nice suit on. It was plaid, so it was a bit out there. But he was wearing it with a t-shirt and a pair of trainers with no socks.
Looking very funky, very cool, and looking very, very smart. Any office, certainly where we're working in Media City, that would be fine. Whether it would cut it though, if you went to work in DIFC, in an investment bank or a law firm, I'm not sure.
This is The Business Breakfast on Dubai Eye 103.8.
The authority on the issues that matter.
We're talking about the future of transport. A number of announcements coming out from the RTA at JITEX in the last 24 hours. We're very pleased to be joined on the line now by Ahmed Mahboob, who is the Executive Director of Smart Services at the RTA. Ahmed, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Do you know what? It's almost hard to know where to start with you this morning because the RTA has been announcing something almost every hour on the first day of JITEX. But let's start with the virtual Knoll card, the Knoll card that will be on your mobile phone. Why was it so important to do this?
This is part of our enhancement while we are approaching Expo. We are trying to make it easy for the public transport users. And instead of just carrying a card and going and top it up, it will be an easy way to just to download it in your phone, top it with your credit card, and then just use it as a virtual card within your phone. So basically, you will be tapping your phone and entering the metro and using all the public transport smooth. This is, again, to make it easier for the daily public transport users. And this is part of, again, our preparation for Expo.
What's the timeline like for the virtual Knoll card?
Okay, we are trying to make it before Expo time, so we are trying to do that within this last quarter or beginning of 2020. And, I mean, part of the same enhancement also, that will be also linked with the new metro gates that we are also showing in JITEX. And those new metro gates will be used in Expo metro stations, which have been enhanced. It has a lot of sensors, cameras, to make it easy for both direction movement and move within the metro stations. It will detect whether you will be carrying luggage, etc. So it's a kind of one package between Knoll card and between the new metro gate.
The Knoll card has had a lot of other functionality put on it since it first launched, a lot of other things you can do with it other than just use the metro. Will those other functions be available on the virtual Knoll card?
Yes, the same now. Like, you know, for non-card, we've expanded the use of it to pay, for example, RTA fees to access the public parks and museums within Dubai in an agreement with the Dubai municipality. And again, we are having a long-term plan to expand the use of it now. You can use it to purchase from Enoch Metro Station, for example. So part of, again, our enhancement, that will be there. But now it depends whether the place that you will be using the card has the same technology or not. Technology is there, but it just needs that kind of reader that should be implemented within those new locations.
The RTA is also making headlines this morning because it's going to be testing digital advertising on the windows of taxis. How is that actually going to work?
Okay, we are going to test now in RTA basically to use the windows in the back seats for the taxi while the taxi is at the station. The ads will be more towards the outsiders, so it will be towards the people who are outside the taxi, so we don't disturb or bother the passenger within the taxi. It's one of a kind of new technology, and we are trying to use it as a movable kind of way of advertisement. But this, again, it will be used while the taxi is at the station, not to distract the drivers.
And you've also launched a new service through the taxi app. Tell us about that.
Okay. Now, Dubai Taxi, as a corporation, has launched a new taxi booking app. It has the same features that you would find in an Uber or a Kareem taxi. The only difference is that it will have extra services that's only exclusively provided by Dubai Taxi. For example, you can order the driver to come to your home and use your car, for example, and it will be per hour. You can also ask for a lady driver just in case you want to use her for your family or to use it for or to use her again for dropping and picking your kids from schools. And all those special services that's only provided by Dubai Taxi, it will be provided through their app.
Will those drivers that you can pay for to drive your own car, will they be 24 hours?
Yes, that will be on a 24-hour basis, but it will be on an hourly rate.
Tell us, is there a limousine service as well that's coming out from the RTA?
Another new services, you mean, part of this? Part of Jitex that we're launching?
Yes, the ability to rent a car, a limousine rather than a taxi.
Yes. The normal services, this is also available there. You can ask for, a normal cab with a driver, like the same way you do with Uber and Kareem. And if you are talking about, for example, leasing or booking a car, that will be part of the enhancement that we have an Exhale app where you can also rent a car only per hour. That will be, again, part of the service enhancement that we are having, part of the Exhale app.
Very quickly, how are you using AI in all of this?
We have one main use case there, part of the AI enhancement, which is part of the Exhale app. It basically reads the actual movement of all the public transport, whether it's being a tram, or metro, or a taxi, or even the buses. It reads the actual movement of it, so you can use the app to see the exact move of the bus, and then accordingly, it can help to build the expectation time for the overall journey. So this is one of the cases of the AI, and we have another one which we've launched, WhatsApp. WhatsApp is basically a chatbot, and it uses AI to respond to all the queries that comes from the customers when it's related to RTA service the services that's being provided by RTA, or what are the channels, what are the steps, what are the procedures and fees. So those are the two main uses of AI that you are having for this year.
So a very busy JITEX for the RTA. Ahmed Mahmoud is the Executive Director of Smart Services at the Roads and Transport Authority. Thank you for your time.
This is the Business Breakfast on Dubai Eye 103.8.
The authority on the issues that matter. The Business Breakfast's Pick of the Papers.
Starting Brandy Scott with a chef.
Yeah, I'm waiting for something to blow up on Twitter, which is always a good sport.
Okay.
I'm just lurking in the background waiting for people to really kick off.
If you were a Manchester United supporter, you would have seen Twitter blow up last night following their 1-0 defeat to Newcastle United. I suspect that's not the type of Twitter storm that you are after.
No, I'm not. I'm looking at a chef called Chef Dean Banks. He was a MasterChef finalist and he made headlines back in May at St Andrews because he was the chef who came out and said that he was going to penalise no-show diners.
Oh, I remember this guy.
People who made reservations and didn't show up because he said, you know, we haven't got a huge restaurant. And he had one Saturday night when 14 people didn't turn up for their reservations. He said, that's 30% of our bookings. I'm £1,000 out of pocket. I've had to throw away a load of food. What we're going to do from now on is for every reservation, we're going to take your debit or your credit card and we're going to charge you £65 if you do not show up. That's what he said in May. And a lot of think pieces were written. I think we discussed it on the Business Breakfast. A lot of chefs weighed in and talked about, particularly smaller restaurants, the problem of people not showing up. Chef Dean Banks is back on Twitter and he said, we promised we would do it. Table of nine, call 1 hour after a reservation and say they're not coming. This is our first big table we've had to do this to. They argued with the bank, but even the bank took our side and the bank made the payment. Hashtag no show diners. So he has finally come good on his promise. And there has been a nasty review from the, it looks like a TripAdvisor review to me, that he has posted on Twitter from the people involved that just says, rip off. That's me doing capital letters.
Thank you.
We had made reservations there, but ultimately had to cancel. I was shocked when I got home and checked my credit card account and found they charged us over $800, the person's American, even though we cancelled the reservation.
Oh, they were tourists.
They were tourists from Idaho. I would never go there and will urge everyone I know never to go there. What kind of customer service is that? I've never had such an experience. Why do they charge you if you don't care if you cancel the reservation? ? Ridiculous business practice. ! Now, the chef's come back and said, you cancelled your reservation an hour after you were due to turn up. That's not cancelling your reservation if it's an hour later. And I'm looking at Twitter, we're up to 244 comments already this morning of people waiting in, a lot of chefs saying, you got to do it. Absolutely. If it was an airline, if it was a theatre and you called an hour later and said, hello, I can't make the theatre at interval, can I have my money back? They'd say, no, you've missed the show. You don't get your money back. Same with restaurants is the argument.
And I am absolutely with Chef here. Whose side are you on?
Oh, totally with the chef.
But I've had that quite often when booking restaurants. Not often's the wrong word. But if it's a relatively upmarket restaurant, they will take a credit card and they will take a reservation for that reason.
There are restaurants here that do it.
In the
DIFC.
Yes.
We're thinking of a popular sushi restaurant.
We are indeed, yeah. Yes. And fair enough, to be honest. I think it's absolutely fair enough.
Absolutely. And do you know what? It's not even just chefs weighing in saying, good for you. Someone else has said, yeah, if you cancel 24 hours in advance, at least it gives some chance for the rest of us who would like a cancellation in order to go to the restaurant.
Exactly.
Because there's a wait list. It does seem like absolutely everybody is coming in on the side of the chef.
My presenter's pick this morning is a story posted actually also on Twitter by Badr Al-Kassami, Sheikha Badr Al-Kassami in Sharjah, about the fact that there's a new boss at a London fashion outlet. This is the story from summer. The tragic news that Sheikh Khaled bin Sultan Al-Kassami died over the summer in London. He was a member of the Sharjah ruling family, had a successful fashion house in London. His sister is going to take it over. Sheikha Hoor Al-Kassami has been named the creative director of London menswear label Kassami. She's going to take over the reins following the death of her twin brother. They were twins, she and Sheikh Khaled. And she's very much from that scene as well, that field, because she's known very much as a patron of the arts. She was one of the driving forces behind the Sharjah Biennale when she was really quite young, and also the Sharjah Art Foundation. She's been a driving force behind that. And while art and fashion aren't exactly the same lane, they're in the same ballpark. She's very much of a creative bent. So she's going to be taking over, which is great, because a lot of people thought, well, with Sheikh Khaled's death, would that mean the end of Kassami, the fashion label? But thankfully, it does not. This is her, Sheikha Hoor, talking to CNN earlier on this year about her work in Sharjah with the Art Foundation and also with the Sharjah Biennale. And it's an interesting take on her because she's the daughter of the ruler of Sharjah, a very senior member of the ruling family there. But this is her talking about rolling her sleeves up and getting her hands dirty when preparing for art events in Sharjah.
And I work 20 hours a day, 7 days a week. We were such a small team. I was sweeping the floor the morning of the opening. I was sticking labels. I was hanging. And I did get some looks from some people like, you're the daughter of the ruler and you're sweeping the floor.
But she did it anyway. And she's going to be spending more time in London as creative director of Casami. And I have to say, I'm delighted that that fashion label is going to live on.
Last pick of the papers for 2 seconds. The FT reporting that HSBC could cut up to 10,000 jobs. It's the interim chief executive, apparently, the FT saying, is seeking to make his mark on the bank. It will be the most ambitious attempt to rein in costs in years, say people who are talking anonymously to the Financial Times.
This is the Business Breakfast on Dubai Eye 103.8.
The authority on the issues that matter.
It's a big focus on transport down at Gitex yesterday. I caught up with the guys from Hyperloop, specifically Virgin Hyperloop One's Managing Director for the Middle East and India, Haj Dhaliwal. Later in the interview, we find out their plans for the UAE. But first, we began by talking about Saudi Arabia and their latest developments there.
I think with Vision 2030 now right at the top of the agenda for the country, diversity away from the oil economy, I think it's so important to have a connected kingdom. And as a consequence of that, what we did about a month ago was sign an agreement with King Abdullah Economic City Authority to really start looking at not only a transportation connection, but also to start looking at jobs, economy, and growth that comes with a new startup industry. And with the vision for the kingdom to diversify, to create that opportunity, create an innovation center, to start tapping into new technologies, I think there is a huge synergy between what we want to do, what they want to do.
When are we going to see, to quote a phrase one of your colleagues used, shovels in the ground in Saudi Arabia?
You know, that's a great question. I'd like to start tomorrow. Okay. But I think
let's go down to Ace Hardware now. We'll buy a couple of shovels.
I think what we've got to do is go through the process. The process of making sure that, first of all, we have a business case, we identify the right route, we identify the opportunities, and then build from that. If you don't do the foundations, don't follow the correct building blocks to a project, which is billions, by the way. We're not talking of projects which are a million or two. These are billion-dollar projects. Then I think it's important that we actually make sure that we set out to attract the investment that's required. So, yeah, what we'll be doing is we'll be wanting to start, and I would take a punt, and I would say that we would want to start shovels in the ground, as you rightly say, back end of 2020.
You've got me pinned down.
I've got a date. Put that in the diary. I am happy for our friends in Saudi Arabia that this is going to be happening there. But selfishly, I would like to see it here in Dubai. Your chairman is from Dubai. Your biggest shareholder is from Dubai, DP World. What can you tell us about talks here in the UAE?
Well, first of all, DP World are now our largest investor in our business. And I have to give credit to the chairman of DP World, His Excellency Sultan bin Salim. I think for us, we have huge opportunities. We're working. What we want to do, and we were with DP World early this week, or back end of last week, but we're also with Dubai Airports. And what we really want to do is look at a fresh review of what the opportunities are, whether it's we connect ports within the UAE, whether we start looking at Fujairah down to Jebel Ali, whether we start looking at airport-to-airport connections. Both have huge opportunities, I think, to enable us to grow. And I think that's what we're looking at right now, is to find that right opportunity. What about connected Dubai? Because that's another area we're looking at, because Dubai is actually spread over 60, 70 kilometers. And when we start looking at Expo 2020, we start looking at the legacy. We want to make sure that South Dubai is as effectively connected within 10 minutes to the rest of Dubai. That, I think, starts making a very big, huge difference. A connection then beyond that into Abu Dhabi, and connect Abu Dhabi to Dubai, because I think the region, once it starts working, or the country and the UAE starts working together as one, I think the power of the economy is huge.
You mentioned Fujairah then. Last time I looked, there was a blooming great big mountain range in between Dubai and Fujairah. You can't go over mountains. Could you feasibly tunnel through a mountain? Not just these mountains, any mountain. Is it economically, technically feasible?
Absolutely right. I'm going to get technical quickly for the listeners who love railways and transportation. You'll find that a high-speed rail railway or a freight railway will probably climb at about 1%, 1.5% gradient. We can actually go up to 10%. So it's almost 10 times more steeper than a conventional system. So going through mountains is actually not an issue for us at all without a type of technology. I'll give you another classic example. In India, where we're looking at Mumbai to Pune, we have to go to what is known as the Ghat section, where literally the central plains of India rise up 250 metres, where we've got exactly the same situation there. And again, because of the gradient climbing capability of our technology and the fact that we can actually tunnel just traditionally, no need to do anything super super special, very achievable.
You've built your test track in Nevada, just outside Las Vegas. We've all seen the videos and it's all very exciting. When are we going to get humans inside that tube?
Well, first of all, I'd like to offer an opportunity for Dubai Eye to come and visit, because I think until you actually see it in reality, it really is beholding. I mean, when you see that technology, when you see it operating, I think then you suddenly start realizing that this is actually no longer just fiction, it is for real. Moving on to, we've done over 400 tests out there now. In fact, our technology is moving into our next generation of levitation controls technology. So we continue to advance, we continue to move forward. That facility out in Nevada at the moment is being expanded. And what we're now doing there is actually building a section of about another 850 meters, which enables us to start testing different types of product that we want to use for building the tube, whether it's steel, whether it's concrete. We're starting to look at what's the most effective, and that's starting to become our test and trial and research ground. So we're starting to move beyond that now, ready for when we put spades in the ground here in the Middle East and India.
And human flight, human travel in this thing, when are we expecting that?
We're close. We're getting there. And I can't say much more than that. I'll get shot.
Maybe Hazza can go and do that. He's clearly the adventurous type, isn't he? He's definitely the man of the moment. Final question in terms of the competition between you and other Hyperloops are available. From your perspective, as a commercial guy in the Middle East, what are you seeing as the biggest competitive playground between you and other Hyperloops at the moment? There are many similarities, of course, but what will be the key differentiator?
The key differentiator is technology. The ability to prove technology, credibility is important. Taking the right steps, focusing in the right areas, and above all, being realistic. Okay? I think that's so important, because we're here raising money, raising funds. They come from institutions that are generally conservative. So for us, being realistic, at the same time understanding that there is an urgency. We want to be the first. We want to be the best. We want to get ahead of the game. But at the same time, there is no room for any kind of error. We need to make sure that safety, approval, certification is all being followed in line. And that takes a little bit of time. Okay, so for us, it is about integrity, it's about credibility, it is about technology.
That's Harsh Dhaliwal, Managing Director for the Middle East and India at Virgin Hyperloop One, talking to me yesterday at Jitex. Thanks for listening. We're back tomorrow morning live on air from 6 a.m.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.